Welcome to the Pebble Hill. No, sorry. Sorry, wrong venue.
Circus, right?
Yeah. Would anyone, does anyone have any curious anecdotes to share when it comes to the bizarre nature of whatever this is or isn't? Where does your mind go if you, contemplate yourself?
Circus.
Good spot.
Needy, greedy, pissy.
Greatest show on earth.
Not fun.
Yeah, I mean, is there an interest or a motive in your present experience that it should be somehow different? More pleasing, perhaps, to you? More
normally.
Scintillating?
Oh, yeah. Normally.
With something?
I don't know. It's not so much self as just the being blown away by all the shit that's happening. Awake or dreaming, and it's just like nonstop creation. It's like just vast vaults, chambers of stuff. Just doesn't end. It's just.
It can interfere with your day.
Well, it does. Yeah. It's hard to get out of bed because I'm trying to. I sort of still try to process it to some extent.
Oh yeah, you're trying to keep up with it. Well, it's good to have a vision of just how much pressure this is, so that you could get a sense of that it's beyond impossible to process it. You see, the psychological time, you could say, is the offspring of an impulse to attempt to process.
Yeah.
Right. The pageantry of this present overwhelm. So that means that, call it mind or awareness, and neither of those is anything, has to pull back, right? Create an imaginary centrism.
State some boundaries.
Right? Yeah. An imaginary centrism from which it processes the cacophony of present experience.
Indeed.
Yes? So feel that split. You literally have to, though you don't do it very consciously, but you have to pull back or away from, oh my God, to create a platform.
A false entity
from which you imagine you can process this. That's two,
yeah.
Right? That's two.
The processing, if it were even to be successful, is meaningless also.
So. Well, it's impossible for it to be successful in the way that we refer to processing. Because this doesn't stop. It keeps coming at you, as you. So there's no way for you to actually extricate yourself from the present chaos or circus of cacophony to process it. Even the sense that you are making decisions, making choices, discerning, asserting, getting it right, is all occurring in myth. It's all occurring in myth. But this, not me, because there's no such thing, this identifies with this arbitrary and artificial centrism or locus from which we are trying to process, right, the madness, the beauty of present cacophony. To see that this is actually unprocessable can give you an invitation to release from, right, the confidence that you place in being an entity, a processing capable entity.
Well, what occurs to me is that whether, you know, you go through different states of mind, sleep, dreams, of, you know, all over the place right now for me.
Yeah.
But then I wake up and, you know, this materialism is just out of control. I mean, I'm not somebody that throws stuff away very much. And I have electronic parts and stuff from technologies from my history. And it's like, I wonder if I would just dive into nature and get a little cab, you know. Maybe I could get a room.
The one next door is available.
With it all,
but the the accumulation of artifacts and clutter.
Yeah.
The accumulation of artifacts as clutter in space is merely a reflection of.
Yeah. That's right. I don't know which is a reflection of what.
Right. It's only a reflection of clutter and call it consciousness.
Yes. But it seems to reflect each other. You know, it's like boom, boom, boom. It's like two mirrors.
Well, it's not two. It's not even reflect. It's the same.
Yeah, what's out is in.
Yeah. So the impulse for cluttering concept, processing, takeaway, reason, justification, safety, getting it right in consciousness is also the, you call it the remnant, the metabolic waste of this imagining that it's other than itself can actually take a position as I, me, my mind, and then process the cacophony for its benefit. So we're all absolutely, unmitigatably nuts to the bone. Even if our home looks zen-ish. We're still crazy.
There's still closets. They're pretty closet.
So the uncluttering is not really all that important, because the cluttering is not really a problem, even if you get to get on the show Hoarders, you know. Even if you end up there, it's still not really a problem. So, you know, the way we try to sign up for remedial relief from our own neurosis and psychosis is by micromanaging the clutter. And it can't work, because the clutter is not real. And it's an artifact of something more profound, that if you don't manage the real, call it wound, or confusion, or hysteria, then you're never going to get where you'd like to be, as if there were such a thing, by micromanaging clutter. Whether that's the clutter in or out of your closets, or the clutter in your mind, in your belief, in your superstition, in your need, in your presumption, in your confidence, in your insistence. You see? I mean, look at everything that makes up one as a persona. How richly bizarre we are. And all of it is a lie. All of it. I mean, all of it is a total lie. I mean, you're beautiful, you're crazy, you're unique unto yourself, you know, the sole inhabitant of experiencing, which is, you are this cacophony. And every single so-called one of us has, you could say, unique personality signature, rhythm and time and processing and communication styles and body language and interests and what we keep private and what we don't, and thank God for that. And yet, it's really all the same thing. It's just the same. It's the unbelievable expressive permutation of pure infinity appearing in one thing. Just one thing, which is not a thing, which just happens to be this. The Brahmanic field sings to itself through Brahmanic permutation.
Jeff, doesn't that mean then that it's not a lie?
Okay. But don't place any confidence in what this is or isn't to say, oh, it's, you
know. Well, that's really the point.
Yeah.
You can't say that it is a lie or it's not a lie.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. This is too beyond, right now even, just sitting around waiting for an incredible standard club breakfast. You know what I mean?
At least eat first.
Yeah, we'll get a good meal in your belly before you pass out.
But what I hear is that presumption and this cleverness is a lie, because it cannot possibly capture this in some conceptual
way.
But
it is this, isn't it?
Yes, it is this with or without a made-up presumption about At least that's how.
So
who's making up the presumption? There's nobody to do it.
So, wow, beautiful.
Yeah. Yum.
So, let's say if there's any discernment to be made, right, lie, not a lie, who's making up the presumption, right? The reflection that everything that appears as presumption, as confidence is a lie. But whose lie? I mean, right, this is a never-ending regression. Because we can play Mad Magazine with each other until, you know, the cows come home. Which is fun to do, but if there's any utility to this, right, it's, let's say it's the gift of a refinement of perception, the gift of a refinement of feeling, the gift of a refinement of diffuse identification, perfect identification, no identification whatsoever. In the midst of a very, very, very loud rock concert that won't quit. If we think that samadhi, borrowing from the eight limbs of, you know, Ashtanga or Raja Yoga, if we think that samadhi, enlightenment, is something other than whatever this is or isn't right now, then you're back in that myth of presumption and uber confidence of objectifying the cacophony, of processing the cacophony from the imagination of a point of view, hoping that, oh, this, which is doesn't exist, will be enlightened someday if I practice the eight limbs. What does morality have to do with this? Not a thing. What does meditation have to do with this? Perhaps less so. And you can see that, you know, the Patanjalis and the Buddhas of the so-called world, or at least the way that they're interpreted, create the same kind of clutter that's sitting in my electronics bin. There's no way that you can wake up to what this is if you are peering at it through, right, the window of a mythic entity, hoping to be enlightened someday. Because you're just remaining here in the clutter fest.
Well, what strikes me is that this just, there, first of all, there's just noticing. And then beyond that, there's noticing that, oh, this is cacophonous or something like that, or identifying or putting a label on. And then all of a sudden, whammo, bringing it to a more physical plane.
Yeah.
And talking about debris.
That's right.
All of a sudden, there's this little tension going on in my neck.
Sure.
And so it's like simply noticing that it is in a state that I don't want it to be in. Okay, I kind of arbitrarily, like, this is too complicated. I need to simplify.
All the symptoms that appear to you in your experience, whether subtle, observational, somatic, are part of the clutter. Right now, everything that's appearing as your experience, a moment of childlike running joy, right, is the clutter. And I don't mean bad or less than. It's just cacophony is more fun because it doesn't have any.
It's a great word.
Here it is. Here's the cacophony of your present experience. Did you do this? Are you responsible for anything that is appearing or even the way that you're feeling it? Responding, thinking.
It seems like it's self-generating.
Isn't
it? Anywhere you go.
Self-generating?
It sure beats the idea that you create your own reality.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, thank God for that.
Oh, God.
What have I done wrong?
That reinforces I as like I'm an utter failure. That's just another version.
Someone that wants to create their own reality has no imagination at all. Like, all those people that buy those books, no imagination at all, no humor, no wonder, no trust, no affection, not an iota. Because they insist, through The Secret or whatever, of creating their own reality. Why would you want this to respond
to this?
To this?
This little thing.
Why would you even have the slightest interest that this would respond to the likes of your needs?
That's a bit scary.
Isn't it? Right? Just imagine you or me like being able to do something. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, forget it. This would be like, it would be beyond toga. Toga! No, we go beyond toga.
Every morning would be the same. God, I wish that never happened. Mm.
Really?
Toga, toga, 24/7.
Let's do it again.
Let's do it
again.
You know,
one thing I am noticing, though, is like, you know, I have my usual story to start, you know, and you take little
sure.
And I catch myself, you know, not all the time, not with him, but I catch myself, like, in the story of, you know, whatever moment, I'm able to, like, pull out of it.
All right. Well, we'll put out contribution envelopes. Donation envelopes that you're no longer insane. Fantastic. This is a profound shift that we have a strong instinct of. But you could say, unfortunately, rarely experiment with. What if this cacophony were to release all control, all worry, all micromanagement, all planning, all presumption of past, all presumption of future? Have no idea what this is right now. And feel it. Just feel it. Completely remove oneself from investment in security.
Useless doesn't work anyway, investment in security.
This is it. This is the Brahmanic source, the Brahmanic field, the permutation, nonstop. Glorious beyond words. How much time, as if there were any, do we treat ourselves to feeling this? We're so familiar with being fucked up and distracted by clutter. We don't know how to just kick back and say, I don't got this. You got this? I'm good. This is the ongoing gift of present being or present experience. There's no lapse in it, which is bizarre. Because we are very accustomed to lapse, right? When it comes to a peak experience or an idea, or a delicious meal, or even waiting for a delicious meal. We're very comfortable and familiar with lapse, because joy is so fleeting, because security is so fleeting, because emptiness of self is so fleeting. Well, get over it. Really. I mean, step up to the plate for, whoa, and sing.
You're thinking food, I'm thinking lap dances.
We're going to go back with Pat to when she was 18 at the bar.
Laps dances.
Yeah, right, laps dances. Yeah. It's like, so like right now, stop. I mean, it's not possible to stop or start anything, but you can see how that impulse arises, let's say, in a seeker, someone that's interested in something fantastic, right? A seeker is someone that's interested
like
in something fantastic, like a good plate of food or a lap dance. It's pretty simple around here.
He's really wild. He's trying to deny it.
We're not buying it.
That's why he wears those shirts.
I think you
give it up.
Oh,
embarrassed himself.
Kick back. Kick back. See if you can find out what joy feels like. And not as a consequence of anything. Weren't we trained that joy can only be the consequence of something acquired, something felt, pleasurable sensation in the body?
As soon as you said that, I automatically went to, oh, all the things I can be joyful about. I was like, no.
Yeah, you see?
That's, I mean, it was unbidden. It just started being.
Bam! So you can see how our typical relationship with joy is object and subject oriented.
When,
yes, when real joy, as if there were such a thing, is barren.
Yeah, the reason's taken away from it.
Yeah, these exercises of forgiveness or of thankfulness, where you sort of process through, you know, it's almost like you're putting them on in the fridge, you know. I don't know.
It's a personal opinion. It becomes a personal opinion. What you're thankful for is a personal opinion.
As long as you're operating from the vantage point of an experiential entity as self, as body, mind, circumstances, and events, then all of these tools that are attempting to give you as an individuated experiencer some relief are all going to fail. This is barren. It's not holding out for an accoutrement, for a gesture, for having the cacophony of experience somehow show up in a palatable, pleasing manner for you in a durable way. Because it's disappearing all the time. Why are we so right on the lookout for durability when it's so clear? I mean, like right here, just ordinary, that it's just disappearing. Your experience never actually lands anywhere, nor can it remain anywhere for even a moment, for even a nano, for a nano, nuno, nuno, nano. It can't. I mean, this is, as an instantaneity, gone. And yet it, whoa, whatever it is or isn't is still here, but it's gone. So if some teacher says something kind of provocative, like you can't find this, right? The implication is you never, ever, ever can land or be in a static position or condition where the cacophony has, for your sake, stopped long enough for you to process it. So even the processing, the sense of processing experience is completely imaginary. And we can feel this, but we don't often give it much emphasis. I mean, something happened, so feel it, so remember it, so speak about it, so try to articulate it. And you can feel like, no, that's not right. No, that's not true. Oh, God, I'm lying through my teeth. Oh, that didn't really happen. It wasn't quite that way. You can feel it, that it's just impossible for you to even experience this moment from the sense of a convinced right? You cannot experience this moment from the point of view of a convinced entity.
Only a version. It's only a version. It's a version.
It's both 21. A version and a version. It's both. Now that's interesting to, let's say, talk about or bring up, you know, in the elevator of this magnificent hall. Because we think our suffering, if there is any, gets its legs from the imagination that you're durable, that experience can be processed, that you can actually know something about this, and then write it in a book or put it on a shelf or record it in a photograph or a video or a recording. And then that's what happened. And this emphasis, this grasping, this reflex to process reality appears to create a split. Because now you are other than.
You know, in a way, I'm thinking about the processing. I'm thinking about something that's beyond the noticing. The noticing, and then maybe it's like the overlay of a judgment. You know, the judgment of...
That's processing.
Okay, well, it's that kind of thing.
Yes.
It's not trying to make sense of it. It's just like, oh, things are out of control. Bad, you've got to get things back into control.
Any relationship with this from the vantage point of linguistic processing is the cacophony, is the mad
even
chaos.
Even that isn't linguistic yet. You know, it's this sense of like, ooh.
Before language occurs in your mind or leaves your mouth, it's very real. Yeah. It's very dynamic. You can actually feel or see language occurring in the fog of you before it even becomes a thought that you tell yourself. Like you were saying the other day that you kept repeating stuff, convincing yourself of stuff
it's
that you're already seeing.
Over and over. It's like, haven't we already had this conversation? That's all I can say to it anymore. Didn't we already have this? Wait a minute.
You see, you're...
Why are you trying to enroll me in this again?
What we call mind...
Same shit.
Yeah, really.
I've already worked through this a million times.
I was there.
Yeah,
we talked about it.
That too.
Do you want a timeout? Keep it up.
When we can refer to mind, at least in two ways, probably infinite, but we'll stay with two just for fun. So one way that we can refer to as mind is the awareness of processing, occupying experience through language, through dialogue, thinking,
thought,
right? Good. So thinking, thought, dialogue, processing experience as an entity perhaps somewhere between your ears, right, is one way of referring to mind. That mind is appears to be bound by time, psychological time. Or that mind is psychological time. It's one and the same. So that mind we can see is imaginary. It's doing itself. It's not necessarily waiting for you to tell it what to do next, what thought to have next, what feeling to have next, what sentiment to have next. You are just, right, spontaneously expressive, even in mind. The conditioning that we have, you could say, as, you know, individual primates, creates what? Or astrologically, astronomically, cellularly, creates the incredible variability of how you are you, right? This is the signature of you. Remarkable. Now, there's another quality of mind which we don't often speak about because it's kind of subtle. And it's that quality of mind that doesn't process this, because that would be the psychological time mind. It's the quality of mind that knows this intimately, instantly. that doesn't have to process present experience through language. Intelligence is actually non-referential. Feel it. Your intelligence, you call it your genuine intelligence, is non-referential. Whereas psychological time is referential because it uses linguistic pattern recognition as an intermediary to process. But feel this from your, that's why they say original mind. The sensitivity that you are that does not need to process this or create separation or an intermediary. Your intelligence is absolutely perfect. Just now. And you can see how the mind that you're familiar with, the jabbering one, right, is actually appearing in perfect mind, which does not process. All sensation, all thought, all imagination, the entire cacophony appears in. Not to. Because appearing to would mean other than. Appearing in would suggest not other than. And this is the nature of your present experience. This is appearing in you, as you. And mind is perfectly lit.
The homunculus, the little me. The little me.
So Lisa, going back to this wonderful practical thing that might occur is that we develop absolutely effortlessly confidence in non-referential mind. And as we develop confidence in non-referential mind, then the need, the reflex to try to process just becomes quieter and quieter and quieter and less intrusive. Because you see yourself as unmitigated, inseparable intelligence. And you feel yourself as such. And feeling yourself as such is dynamic, is riveting, is profound beyond words, is divinely disinterested in all permutation.
It's like when you wake up from a dream and you're like remembering your dream, it's like very vivid, and then it just slowly fades, right? It's like you're trying to process maybe, then you're like, I can't really remember, and then you're out of bed and you have no idea. It just kind of slowly fades into...
And these are all very specific things that just go.
That's how this is. You know what I mean? Is that stairs?
Yeah, I mean real specific things and moods and people, entities that you know, and they're like
same as this.
Seemingly so.
Like transient.
Yeah.
Didn't we just do this 2 minutes ago?
In a way, I get that. You know, and, yeah, I've noticed that it seems less frequent, maybe, or less. Sometimes it's better. But I seem to be maybe less body than I don't know. I don't want to try that. There's a minute I say that, like, I'll be it. Yeah, I'll spend.
let's say this table right here, wherever, is the so-called present moment of your life. I don't really know if that's true, but we got to start somewhere.
Thank you.
Show me the inventory of everything that happened to you prior to this moment. Show me all of the awards that you won, because you controlled it in the past. I'd like to see the mantle place in your home where you've got more Oscars than anyone can count, because you were the star of the show and you actually did your life. You controlled it. You decided. You made it happen. You enjoyed it. You suffered it. You're going to do something again. You'll never do that again. Show me all the awards. You got nothing. You've got bupkis. 86 on you. You have nothing.
Well, you can go back to memory and say, well, yeah, but what about this, this, and this? But there's, it really does seem highly suspect.
It could be useful to see that memory is highly suspect.
Also, quite daring. You know, you try to remember the good stuff, that stuff just jumps in there and growls it like crazy.
If there's such a thing as memory, what's actually occurring? Why do we use the word memory? What are we referring to when we say memory?
Images. Whatever they come up.
Presently appearing cacophony.
Yeah, it's part of that. It's just more of that. It's more of this.
That's it. Memory is the word that we use to refer to presently appearing cacophony. Does it make it real? I don't know. What the hell is real?
Freeze frame.
So you're really saying this is no more real than those funny memories.
Why would it be? If it's unprocessable because it's too wild and doesn't quit, then is it real or is it unreal? Is your present experience real? Unreal. Is it actual or is it imaginary?
It's like when your DI doctor, real? Unreal.
Yeah.
How about this?
How about
real?
Now?
Unreal. How about now?
The interesting thing is, you know, like, okay, so I watch TV and I read books and I'm doing the same. They're going back in history. And one of the things they, you know, they're going back in history of Scotland and England, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So, the interesting thing about it is this woman, because she goes back in time, she changes appearance.
Do you use the word baron?
Hmm.
Cacophony.
Mm.
So, of course, I'm latching on to Baron Cacophony.
Nice. Baron.
I just love those.
It is.
As a title of a person, you mean Baron Cacophony.
It's a Baron Cacophony.
Baron von Cacophony.
Baron von Cacophony.
Is he German?
It's paradoxical, and our experience of experiencing is likewise paradoxical. So the fermentation or fomentation of self, which is synonymous with nonstop irritability, is because awareness is tuned to the fullness of cacophony, the permutation, the proliferation, the processing, the unspeakable remarkability of all that is occurring in consciousness as consciousness. That's the cacophony. I mean, it's the shift. What's the barren part mean? In the midst of this seductive, profound, attractive cacophony, including the misery of self, It's completely barren. It's empty, absolutely of any interest.
Why? I wonder
why.
It's
difficult to listen to one. You can't think about. I can't think about barren and get it. Because then you're moving into a single definition. But barren cacophony rings.
It's both. Samsara and nirvana are the same, right? Emptiness and form. One and the same.
Mm-hmm. But for
yoga
me,
and boga.
For me, because the minute I try to understand the dual nature, I'm out of it.
Well, yes, if one tries to, for fun, process the dual nature as a symptom of that dual nature, good luck. That's an infinite regression,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So it's better for me not to try to.
Well, that's why I suggested.
This way or that way.
That's why I suggested that mind can be seen in right. These two ways. One way is mind as psychological time, which suggests the sense of separation, of self, of apartness. The other mind, quality of mind, is perfectly identified instantaneity, which is barren.
And requires no processing.
No processing. Yeah. And there, and you are, let's say, of the nature, because this is of the nature, of these, we could say, two hints, whispers, or aspects of a profundity that otherwise is not fracturable. A barren cacophony. So the average primate lives under the influence of cacophony, and therefore insecurity and restlessness, acquisitiveness, control, drama, right? Addiction, everything we've got. That's, you could say, that's the realm of cacophony. And being associated and identified with the cacophony as a disparate self, as a disparate creature. Okay. Nice. Now, this means we don't have to process everything that happens in the human atmosphere. Because we see that everything that occurs in the human atmosphere is simply an identification with cacophony as being other than it. Okay, that's it. That's the geometry of suffering. No biggie. And being that simple, it would certainly be absurd, if not stupid, to sell you an eightfold path, an eight limbs of yoga, anything to do about anything. Because what the hell are those? Well, it's just more cacophony. It's just bullshit management. Really, all of it. Patanjali, Ramakrishna, the whole thing. Bullshit management.
You scared that lady. Oh my god.
Did you get a look?
I just walked by.
You should never get excited about realization in public places.
Well, then.
You're going to piss somebody up.
But the barren makes such a difference because otherwise the inclination may be to think that there's this underlying perfect story underneath. You just got to get all this crap out of the way first.
Well, that's why you accumulate the crap and then get excited about getting rid of the crap, right? In always in search of a jewel that's elsewhere and other than here.
It's underlying.
Right?
And there is a jewel, but the jewel is...
Happens to be up your, already up your ass.
It is this cacophony.
It is this barren. I'm not crazy about it. That seems tinged with some.
I think it refers to marriage and mother.
All right. Marriage and mother. Shoot. All right.
Your intelligence has the remarkable capacity of profound disinterest.
Profound disinterest. Is there anywhere else where
term would ever be used.
At work. You're as familiar with it as I am.
He said everything.
That's true.
Barren or profound disinterest is not void of interest.
Or disinterest.
It's low.
I mean, the way that we report upon our lives prior to this moment is that I had something to do with it. But you didn't. Neither did Genghis Khan, or Constantine, or Jesus, or any of the popes that have come and gone.
What would you say about the experiencing? If we change the definition of I as not meaning the independent self, just whatever. I forgot the original one.
Nice. There you go. Back in,
back into
the barren. I've fallen again into the barren. I had a question, but I can't find
it. Wait a minute. Oh.
It's back.
I'm trying.
It's
experiencing.
There's
like a quality of experiencing this.
There is a quality, maybe.
But I lost the rest of it, whatever it was.
Well, why shouldn't you? This is disappearing. Of course you're going to lose it. The fact is that you're always losing it. You can't really say anything about this. You can't, even though try and stop me.
I have a couple guests at the cottage that I must go.
Okie dokie.
Are they mammalian or human? I mean,
no,
are they
probably entertaining each other? Two ladies.
Why are you breaking in on that?
He's got to get back.
We'll make it easy.
I'm surprised you
left. Have a good time.
Were you thinking even coming to breakfast?
I have to get back. Of course.
Two women entertaining themselves in my cottage.
Everybody full? Is that enough food?
Yeah, that was nice. That was really nice.
That's okay.
Thank you. That was great.
Awesome.
It was really good ingredients.
Oh,
nice to have.
Oh, we
don't spoil. Too late. I expect wild mushrooms every time.
What did he say? Don't get used to it?
He said don't get spoiled.
None of these changed mushrooms.
Basically, listen, you'll put up with whatever the fuck I give you when you come here.
Yeah.
We're like, okay.
It's all good.
Come up with whatever that was.
It's all good.
So, I experience a differentiation of preferences.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so how do you... there seems to be a differentiation. That's all I can say.
That's right.
Oh.
Okay, good.
Infinitely. Infinitely. That's the point, right?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
To me, it seems like maybe what you can do if you're not taking it seriously is pursue your preference, freedom.
Well, but why would you assign yourself to doing or not doing anything?
It's going to happen. Something has
well,
to happen.
Well, I said pursue, only because, actually because there's going, something's going to appear.
Apparently
and,
so.
And if there's the orange juice and the dishwater, well, this is the way I'm going.
Go with the
I'm
orange
gonna
juice.
I'm not going to drink the dishwater.
Yeah, but is that your decision?
That's just a logical.
I'm trying to think about experiences and preferences, and I know it's confusing. But
well, what's the
just a proclivity? You know, it's just
water.
There seems to be the differentiation. There seems to be the enjoyment available.
Yeah, no quarrel, of course.
Hmm.
the expression of permutation, of experience, of the nature of things, is non-finite. That would include preferences, orange juice and dish water, birth and death, happy life, unhappy life.
But I feel a turning toward the preference. This is where I'm like, not sure what's going on.
Okay, let's say there's a turning toward.
Is it because the gift is there for me to receive? Like what? Because everything just appears.
Including the turning toward.
Okay.
So you can, but I would recommend not orienting to this as an individual. Mm-hmm. With preferences. Although we both can see a lot of evidence for conveying one's experience as occurring to an individual with preferences. But it's not true. It's an idea. All that's appearing is appearing profoundly, perfectly, spontaneously, and impersonally. It always has.
There is nothing behind your head.
No.
No.
Even you, right now, is just appearing in you. Every gesture, every scratch, every cellular thing.
I experience the ability to...
Yes.
Which I don't know.
Yeah. Well, look at the evidence that gives you the confidence of having the capacity to prefer. What you're simply noticing is cacophony and impulse.
So maybe it's like the smaller picture. There's the cacophony, and then there's the focus in on choose.
Yeah, but even choose, but see, even choose is a lie, because what's actually occurring is spontaneously proliferating an impersonal impulse that then mind comes in and says, oh, I chose. I exercise preference.
And meanwhile, it's in your face. It's sort of like whatever it is, it's in your face. And so you're just quite naturally going to go with that, and you'll call it a choice.
So then are you saying... It's always hard for me to articulate these things. Are you saying then that at a certain place in mind, I guess, because I can't know when, there are no preferences? Is that what you're saying?
Sure.
But would you experience the enjoyment of one thing over another? Would you still experience that?
How's it going so far?
I would say yes.
Far out, rock and roll, keep it up.
All right.
Okay. Well, in enjoyment, physical sensation, right? Biological nourishment, as contrasted with, you know, biological rusting, has a certain signature, has a certain feeling. I mean, being drunk and dying from alcoholism doesn't necessarily feel all that good, but it doesn't stop us. That you or any of us would refer to this presence from the vantage point of a disparate entity, right? A separate biological package with free will is misery.
But so my question is, can you be free?
Which you already are, because this already is. Yeah. Can you be? Yeah.
So then I can't ask the question.
Well, no, go ahead. Can you be free if you, because of, once
I
you...
experience, I mean, you can be aware of, if you can be aware of your thoughts arising.
Yes.
You can also be aware of joy or sadness. Okay?
Yes.
And then the preference comes to joy. Not that you run away from sadness if it appears.
Yeah.
It's that you experience a preference.
Yeah, but we're yes, all of that is clearly so and well articulated, but we're referring to preference less joy. You see, the joy that you were talking about.
That in itself is a preference.
Huh?
That in itself is a preference.
No, it's a discovery.
I mean, not that we argumentative, but in my mind, it's enjoyable. There's a preference. If I call it joy, it's a preference.
Well, a preference seems to be an overt action. And I think that what you're saying is it's just a sinking.
Underneath that has to be a duality of your assessing what's here, good, bad.
Maybe.
What I prefer, what I don't prefer. You're making everything sort of black
and
white.
But if an emotion comes up...
You're speaking of joy as an artifact of experience. And therefore, one would prefer joy than not joy.
You wouldn't. I don't think you'd even call it joy. If it wasn't already.
Okay, so now we're talking about family-sized joy. No frills, no frills joy.
Happy joy, joy.
So in that place, is there no preference? Is what I guess I'm trying to get at.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. But that doesn't mean that it's absent of preference or has transcended preference or is anything other than preference or not preference.
That sort of preference at all, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Is this a place? Well, maybe. Is this time? Maybe. Am I experiencing? Not quite sure.
So it becomes harder to have an opinion while having all your preferences.
And it's sort of a question without going into a small place, I think.
Yeah, yeah. That's, yes, you could say that the adventure of awakening is the journey from a small place to no place. Because as this is identified with itself as a discrete being, biological housing mechanism for self, it's a small place. If you're dwelling in a small place with a lot of preferences, suffering is your constant companion. You are a, what are those twins called?
Conjoined.
Conjoined is the more politically correct, right, than Siamese. Why were they ever called Siamese twins? What the hell is that?
It's a good question.
It is a good one.
Google.
Yeah,
I'm having Google Tourette's.
Yeah, I guess
so. So self and suffering are conjoined at birth. And we want to wiggle free of suffering as self.
Yes.
Yeah.
Go find the surgeon.
Oh, Lord.
We want to cut off our twin.
Yes.
And not bleed to death.
Yeah. That's right. That's right.
We just need to bleed
yeah.
to death.
And so you see, now, but something profound can occur in one's, call it, remedial journey. Right? Oh, you mean to tell me that suffering and self are conjoined? That I can't be the self without suffering? Oh, I might want to shift my strategy now. I don't know what that is yet, but I might want to shift my strategy. Yes.
It's a lot easier doing it what I mean? Like, to have this conversation, like, what was it to recognize that, you know, your life is nothing but a story and blah, blah, blah.
Blah, yeah, right. Blah, blah, blah.
What we're talking about here,
yeah.
You know, well, it's not highly likely that that's going to occur without some...
It can...
It can,
but however your life unfolds, it's just the curiosity of you. You might want to hang out with some people and kick this around. You might have profound epiphany or realization, you know, in the privacy of your home, doing nothing or doing a bunch of stuff. You know, a lot of so-called awakened celebrities make a big deal of their so-called, you know, bliss moment. Was on the tail end of what was an unbearable descent into hell. And they did it solo.
Yeah, but a lot of them were exposed to something.
If that happens, and also that doesn't happen. There are, you know, call them, you know, awakeners, right? The ultimate blasphemers that just stumble into it without any preparation. Or even acute suffering. Okay, well, if we were keeping stats, then you might be right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But,
Well, see, so you place yourself in the context of someone that may be or may not be interested in this stuff, and then you want to improve your odds. So that means maybe you'll hang out with people, or you won't, right? In other words, we create stories in situ, meaning presently, about who we think we are and what this is now, the possibility that it might be something other than what we think it is, that it might be actually more joyful for me if I lived with it in a different way in my future, and so now I want to figure out the optimal path to that. Well, should I go sit Zen or Vipassana? Should I take LSD or ayahuasca? Should I come to Andres on Sunday mornings or go to the park? But you can't really strategize. Or you can, but it's like the suggestion box that has no bottom and no one reads them. You can strategize all you want about everything under the sun, under your control, under your influence. And it's just a giant suggestion box with no bottom and no one reads them.
Strategy today is not strategy tomorrow.
So strategizing is the myth of cacophony. It truly is. Or... whatever, yeah, whatever the motive may be, whatever the psychological, spiritual, emotional motive may be, to either ameliorate present suffering or to get something better. If I'm suffering, I want to ameliorate present suffering. If I'm neutral, I want something better. It never stops. Right? It just never stops. And if I'm having a peak experience, whether it's with two ladies at my cottage or elsewhere, then I don't want it to end. I'm going to always be miserable. Suffering, I'm miserable. Neutral, I'm miserable. In the midst of peak experience, I'm still miserable. Because I'm all worried that it's going to end. You see, that's cacophony. That's how good it is at fooling us into this myth of durability, myth of self. That's why barrenness or divine disinterest is worth bringing to the table so that you can feel what this is or isn't right about now, not under the influence of the addictive rumination of Mo-Betta. Make no move. Really, face the restlessness, the psychiatric restlessness. Face it down. Walk right up to the beast. Stare it down.
So, it just came to me, thank you.
All right. Yeah. Another donation envelope.
What I was talking about was goddamn in the past. That's why you can't.
That's right.
That's why it's different.
That's right.
God damn it.
God damn it.
I should have known.
God love it. Yeah, you see, so going back to the early launch of whatever this is happening so fast and so full and so strangely and disappearing just as quickly that you can't actually process it. So anything that you say, any of us says, is already gone and can't really refer to what this is, including preferences and processing and memory and I suffered and I stopped suffering and I was drinking and I'm not drinking. Everything is appearing in the miracle of present cacophony. Unprocessable. And have one moment of intimacy with this being unprocessable. And you're doomed. Awake is going to catch up with you and cut your fucking head off.
Doomed.
Truly doomed. Now, you could call that a preference, right? Once this sneaks up on you and shows you in one simple, lucid moment that this is unprocessable, you're coming back for more. So is that preference? Destiny? Who knows?
It's the Vulcan track.
Yeah. And as we do this, it's just more or less it's a reduction sauce. We just jump in the pan and simmer off. That's the process, as a process. Jump in the pan, simmer off. As you simmer off, glimpses of unadulterated mystery land in you. Now, is that felt? Is that the consequence of the body, of the mind? No. It's not, because the body and mind are artifacts of what this already is. They're not independently existing. They're not responsible for anything. They're not causative.
But there's still a radiance that goes right through all that, too.
That is the radiance, which is this, right? And therefore everything that appears in it, as it. It radiates, but not from a place.
Right.
It radiates, but not from a core. It radiates, but not from a preemptive condition. Isn't this strange? You can't. I mean, you can look at the sun in the sky, and you can say that motherfucker's radiant, and you'd be right. But where does the sun radiate from? That's too bizarre. Oh yeah, that's good. Pick up devotees just about anywhere these days.
We need to have a little sign that says, come on, sit down.
You can hear you from
stay a while.
Well, that's, I know.
I'm like in the bathroom, like, oh, I can still hear you.
I'm an unapologetic booming force. Yeah. And then as you speak or sound, everything will line up. You can feel it.
So it changes the tenor of your voice.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you
that's
can boom.
That's what really, really cool old concert halls are designed for, is everything comes from the stage out into the audience, and it's like really powerful how things can project from that playbar.
What are we talking about?
References.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
You have a soundtrack.
Yeah, I know.
Well, he was talking about his preference to speak loudly and harmonic with certain rooms, apparently.
Well, somebody walked by. And,
well, that's it. The sun. We left off with the sun.
Oh, the sun!
Radiance.
Yeah. Oh, the sun!
Oh, that thing.
You can notice that this as having the nature of radiant expression has no discernible source, nor does it even have a discernible recipient.
Yeah.
Right? So that...
To have a source sort of implies a recipient.
It has neither source nor recipient.
Object or something.
That's what's so. That is the, call it, divine disinterest. Body, mind, preference, experience, light, color, touch, taste, smell, the entirety of all is appearing, right, in the miracle of a sourceless and recipient-free radiance. So what does that make you? Well, I must be the sourceless and recipient free radiance, not the shit that is happening in it. Right? So the real yogi, they sit kind of, you know, strangely, quietly in a Baroque manner, right? Immersed in something that the average person can't see. And you wonder, what's that guy or what's that woman doing? Well, they're just chilling in the source and recipient free radiance, because there's absolute perfect disinterest in all that's appearing in it. Now you have to ask yourself, right, as let's say a seeker that's inspired to ameliorate suffering, you have to ask yourself, have you signed up for source and recipient free radiance, or do you just want your suffering to feel better? How far are you going? What freedom are you signed up for? Something partial, particular, self-satisfying, or something that takes it all away? Without going anywhere, without changing anything. It's real easy to sign up for Patanjali's samadhi, which is just a way of saying I'm not really interested. It's really easy to sign up for the Buddha's nirvana, which is just another way of saying no thanks. Not that interested, really.
It's heresy to the little eye to say, I'm going to just set it down. Stop manipulating, negotiating, trying. It's heresy.
Okay, so I'm going to try to ask another question.
Why not?
So Nirvana lands here as having no desires. But then, after the experience of having no desire, which you did previously, then you want it again. What the hell?
That's good. What the hell? But see, you can see that our interest, at least conversationally, can aim in a million directions, but let's look at two. One direction is of the nature of particularization. Something happened. Something's happening. Something's likely to happen in the future, and I'm going to explore it. Right? Play around with its nuances and its textures. That's one way. The other is...
Right? So that's the barren chaos again.
Yes.
But you said chaos barren.
Yeah. Yeah. So this, without particularization, right? Whatever this is or isn't, without destination, is barren wonder. Full, full. A barren landscape full to the brim.
Were you,
and spilling over.
Were you asking about the interest aspect? Where it's like, I mean, I think we get caught up on words sometimes. So I can see where it's like saying choice, a word like that. And sometimes it's like, so if your interest is beyond all this cacophonous noise or whatever, or stories, let's say, you'd say, oh, well, you were making a choice to not be interested in that. But I mean, you know, we're just limited by words. I don't know that you could call it choice, for lack of a better thing, but I think there's just sort of a just letting go. You know.
Well, you're not really limited, and certainly not limited by words. This is limitless. Which happens to particularize, right? So limitlessness has this remarkable capacity to express or exploit, right? Memes, anecdotes, which appear to be limited, including what words we have or don't have to refer to, right? The unreferable. You can be perfectly sanguine in limitlessness and be fumbling with words at the same time.
I kind of like
it. I got the fumbling with words part down.
Well,
yeah,
thank
yeah.
God.
Yeah. The fumble pro.
I'm assuming it's
Yeah, I think it's same as always.